From In Goal Magazine and NHL.com, Kevin Woodley joins us once again. And Kevin, the great part about the playoffs, it's always unexpected. Last week, it looked like Martin Jones couldn't stop anything. And now you go into game 5 and 6, and he looked virtually unbeatable. What changed?
Combination of things. And we talked about this going into the playoffs. Remember I talked to you about just how high a percentage of goals for him that I tracked were off the rush? Like 54% of the goals that I tracked on him, which is the last 100 for the annual NHL.com sort of playoff preview, were off the rush. And that's like the average for this project of over, I guess now close to 6,000 goals, is under 40%. And he's at 54%. And a lot of that spoke to not just the quantity, but the quality of rush chances they were giving up, the number that were odd man, the number of times I tracked a goal where it was rush, pass across the slot line, one-timer, tip your hat, not much of a chance. Yeah, you'd like to make a few of those saves, but and he did last night. He made one tough one. But if you give up enough of them, you know, as Robin Lehner told me this year when he was in Buffalo, if we give up 4 a game and I have a really great game, one's still going in the net. So that's part of what's changed. They've protected him in terms of those types of odd man rush chances. Like I said, full marks. He made the save on the one last night. But I got to be honest with you. And, you know, at the risk of losing my union card here, when you watch the highlight packages from last night, and 58 saves is a big number, and he deserves a ton of credit. Not many mistakes in there. How many were highlights?
Well, I thought the Marchessault save in overtime might have been his best one. Marchessault beats a defense when he's wide open in the slot. And, you know, Jones made a lot of saves last night, Kev. I thought, looked very simple. Very simple. And so I wonder, okay, was it not a good scoring chance, or was he just in good position?
A little bit of both. And that's when Martin Jones is at his best. We call him at In Goal Magazine, we call him Big Vanilla. Because when he's playing well, it is simple. He's not excessive in anything. He plays a very clean game. And the problem is, in the past couple of years, a lot of sort of the cleanness technically has started to slip. And what I liked last night is there was no chase. He's a big body and he played a conservative game. And they did, again, by making it an end zone game, the reads are a little easier for him. He is pretty read reliant. Off the rush is where he tends to get himself in excessive positions that can be sort of taken advantage of with lateral plays. When he's playing sort of in the paint inside out, that's the potential what you saw last night. Now, that said, and again, risk of losing the union card, we're celebrating the save total, and there is a part of me that wants to say, it never should have got to overtime. I mean, and these are the technical details that I frankly still need to tighten up in his game. The goal that he gave up, yes, it's a rebound. Yes, it's to Marchessault at the side of the net. Yes, he does a good job getting his pad down as he sort of flops and he takes away the bottom of the net. And Marchessault's wide open, and you blame it on the defense for not getting it up. But when you really break down that play, after he made the save, he got up on the wrong leg out of the butterfly. He needed to move to his right. To move to your right on your knees, you lift your left leg first, grab a skate edge, and push. He actually got up with his right skate, something that happens a little more frequently in his game than in others' game. I think it's a factor of being a little off balance. We talked about how the lack of rotation, especially moving to his right on the first shot, but that's a simple shot, a rebound he sees, creates, and feels, and knows where it's going, and he still gets up with the wrong leg. To put it in perspective, getting up on the wrong leg in the butterfly is the kind of thing we fix in Adam. That's how fundamentally off that is for him to get up off the wrong leg. And if you break down the whole goal, the reason he's prone, the reason he's not able to make a good push and get more than his pad there is because he got up off on the wrong leg. And those are the type of details that make you think, as good as he's been, it's a catch-22, because you see how he's capable of playing, and then you see those details that have slipped, and you're like, man, if you just take care of this simple stuff, you could be back to the guy that people talked about as, you know, like an elite number one, not a guy who's sub 900 on the season. And I still believe that a lot of his performance this year is cumulative, poor defense, a lot of rush chances behind that team, and they do surrender a lot. And this is him behind a little more structure, a little better support. This is what he's capable of. But the other side is true as well. To hit another level, to be consistent, those details that cost him on that goal, that cost him on too many goals that I watched this season, still need to be improved and tightened up. You're not fixing that before game seven, but if you're the Sharks and you've got a goalie under contract for the next 5 years at 5.75 per, I'd suggest you find a fix for it moving forward, because those are the details that hurt you all year, and you just hope they're not going to hurt you at a crucial time this year.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. He's our goalie guru, talking all things goaltending. Now, Kev, I love it. Let's just get your card banned from the Union today. That'd be awesome.
I'm on a roll.
I watched the shorthanded winner. I just thought that's a goal that Fleury missed. Like, I watched the replay. I don't believe it ever went off Theodore's stick. Theodore kind of made a slash hurdle, and it got him on his stick, but I didn't see any movement on that puck. Is that just that, like, you look at Fleury's reaction right afterwards, that's when he wants back.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I'm going to defer to a pro on this one. And this is the thing about my gig. Like, I've learned a ton. I feel confident in my ability to break down technical. But reading a release, reading what a goaltender's seeing in a release, as much as I can, I'd like to ask a pro. I'll use my, what was that game show where you could sort of dial, help a friend?
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm going to refer to Mike McKenna, who, if you're not following him already, he's got something called McKenna Live. If you follow it on Twitter, I retweeted it last night. And when he has a chance to watch a game, he'll actually break down some of the technical components of a game while it's going on in the playoffs. And last night was a perfect example of where his insights are invaluable. So I saw the same thing you did. What I wondered about was first the stick, but what first thing that jumped into my mind was Fleury was moving to his left. And we'd heard a lot about how San Jose was clearly going after his glove in this series. And my first instinct was, man, did Marc-Andre Fleury just cheat glove? Like, did he just get caught cheating glove and the shooter delivered blocker? Like, is that what we just saw there? Because he definitely moved and shifted in that direction. Mike had a really good take on it. It's not that the puck hits the stick. It's that the defenseman's stick hits the stick blade as the puck's being released. And that changes the read on the release. Like, you're reading glove. Everything about that shot says glove. And when the stick hits the shooter stick, it changes the way it comes off the blade. It basically becomes really bad luck that it gets delivered to the other side. Everything about that shot says high glove, and all of a sudden it's delivered low blocker, not because of deception, but because of that stick impact. That was Mike's take on it, and I would defer to him as a guy who stopped how many tens of thousands of shots, and he took the time to break it down and frame by frame and see where the stick contact was. I thought it was on follow through, so after the puck's off the blade, but evidently, the puck's still on the blade as that impact occurs, and that definitely is enough to throw it off. So, as good as Fleury's been, and to be honest with you, we talked about Jones. I kind of watched that whole game and thought maybe Marc-Andre Fleury, despite a ton less volume, actually, I was asked to make some tougher saves in that game overall, more tougher saves,
especially
in the slot.
I would agree. I thought San Jose definitely had the better high-end scoring chances for sure in that game. Now, Kev,
so when you see a mistake like that, you don't think it can be a read. And like I said, I defer to McKenna on what really happened there.
Okay. I just saw Fleury's reaction. He just kind of looked like, oh, my goodness. Like, now, a goalie, I know most goalies think they should have every puck, so I understand that. That's their competitive nature.
Well, sometimes it can be, too. I can't believe it. Like, I can't believe the worst thing as a goalie, the one that creates the reaction, whether it's beer league or NHL, and I've talked to a lot of players about this, is the miss, where it doesn't go where that guy's shooting in a certain spot, and it comes off funny, or he misses, or it hits something, and it changes, and it beats you somewhere else, and you're just like, he knows, you know, that kind of thing, but the puck goes in the net, and everybody that's watching doesn't know any of it. They just think you suck.
Kevin Woodley, Mingo Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. Goaltender interference has had a lot of people fired up over the weekend. What did you make of the decisions?
Oh, I guess we start with the Rask one. To me, that's goalie interference. And at the risk of offending Leafs Nation, I thought that was pretty clear. Didn't think he was pushed. Thought he went there on his own accord. What I can't say is a lot of people will say, Austin Matthews one tees at middle of the net. You can see Rask go to track that puck across, and then all of a sudden there's that contact there, and he can't keep following it. I'd like to think he has that pad there easy if he's able to track that across without any interference, and that's an easy save. That said, Austin Matthews might see that he's not there and shoot it in the middle of the net, whereas if he sees Rask coming across, as skilled and as talented as he is, he puts it up into a corner of the net that Tuukka can't get to without interference. So I won't pretend to know whether the shot changes if Tuukka gets across, but I do think that without the interference, he at the very least gets a pad across and has, because he pushes really well to his left, especially. So I'm actually, in his case, I'm betting he gets a pad, a glove, and he's kind of built some coverage above that pad as he slides across. Maybe even a torso, and it would take a much better shot to beat him. So to me, that's goalie interference. You know, the first one on Hellebuck, you know, the puck ends up going in because of the buffaloing contact. What I'm not sure about is the Blues player initial contact what causes him to go skate on post instead of skate inside post into his coverage there. Because at the end of the day, it was a bad bounce. But if you look at it, and we've talked about this a lot at InGoal, and it seems like every year in the playoffs some of these goals cost. When players go into the post with the bottom of their skate against the post, there is a gap between the skate blade and the bottom of the pad that is more than enough for a puck to fit through. Like, you don't have that post sealed along the ice. And in this case, that gap was there. It hit his skate, went straight up off the crossbar and off his back. And what I wonder is if the St. Louis player nudging him as he goes to set up his coverage causes him to miss a better seal, which would be to have the skate inside the post and that bottom edge of the pad against the post, in which case that puck's got nowhere to go. It doesn't go in. It just dies in front of him, and he covers it. Easy peasy. Watching some film on Hellebuck, he's not consistent in that type of rush situation. He probably goes skate on post anyways, and so I don't think the interference played that much of a role. The second one's tough. The glove cuff is tough because he initiates the contact, but Maroon never gives it up. Like, that's the one that they never got the challenge that, frankly, it looked like goalie interference to me. Other people don't think so, but I would have sure liked to see a ruling on it.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine, NHL.com. Quickly, Kevin, you look at the Bishop and Rene in that series. Ben Bishop, a finalist. I know you talked about him. He had some great numbers. I don't think he wins because he didn't play enough games. But
hey, come on. How do we have two finalists playing 45, 46 games? And last year, Marc-Andre Fleury and Antti Raanta don't even get a finalist nod, despite playing the same amount of games and having far superior numbers. There's my rant for the day.
Well, GMs vote on that, so I guess I'll have to ask them. I know the goalie.
What do they
union,
know about goaltending?
I know the goalie union never really likes that one. have you seen a clear advantage? Does Dallas have a distinct advantage in goaltending so far, and do you think that plays out tonight?
I haven't watched every minute. So I got to throw that caveat out, because so much of it is, when you talk about distinct advantages, what type of attacks are they creating? What I like about what Dallas has done, beyond the top line dominating, is they've attacked from below the goal line. They've attacked on low-high plays. And there are a number of goaltenders in these playoffs who are most vulnerable on those types of plays. And Bishop is top of that list. Like, in my preview, like 25% of his goals were originated on plays from below the goal line or near the goal line or even up to the bottom of the circles, where he's using sort of a post-integration tactic, sometimes even when it's not even that sharp an angle. And I just haven't seen the Preds try and create enough offense that way. I'm a little surprised by it. This isn't, sort of a slight blip, slightly above average trend. Like, he is off the charts on those numbers in terms of the percentages of goals he gives up compared to the rest of the league. And just, this can be the tough thing. Calgary, too. Grubauer was one of the only guys that was even close to that. And sometimes it can be tough to convince skill players, like Calgary's top line, for example, to try and create what seems to be a grind style of scoring play. But I'm seeing Dallas create it, and I'm seeing them have success with it against a big goalie who creates holes moving in and out of his post. And I'm not seeing the same from the Predators in the games I have watched and the periods I've watched, where they're trying to exploit the same thing on Bishop. And we're talking about 25% of the goals he gave up this year being on those types of plays. It would seem to make sense to me to try and attack him from plays that contributed to that many goals this season. And I have not seen enough of that.
Kev, as always, great stuff. By next week, we'll know what the matchups are in the next round. So we'll be able to break those down and see who's hot, who's not. Appreciate it.
Well, and the bigger question, Jason, I'm looking forward to getting the answer myself. Who stays hot? This has been a long time off for Sergei Bobrovsky, and I'm curious to see how he starts the next round once we get there.
All right, man. We'll talk about it. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.